Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Brandon, there's a few places we could start, including trying to make sense of two or three things on this show. But I want to start with the MJF-Ricky Starks exchange, building up their match next week. Starks wins the Dynamite Diamond Ring Battle Royal. I think that's what it's called. I'm still not sure. which I believe gives Starks a right to fight MJF for the Diamond Ring next week, which AEW has explained, but it's convoluted enough. I know people are asking me what's going on and what's happening and what's for the ring, what's for the title. But Winter is Coming, they're wrestling each other next week. And MJF just tore Starks down, called him a pebble, a mini, you know, an imitation, derivative version of The Rock, stealing all his material, and it was like there was nothing left. And then Starks retorted MJF and gave, I thought, like the promo of his career. I thought he was just, you know, fantastic and shows, you know, MJF can, if you allow MJF to dish it out, he'll stand there and take it also. I thought that was great. And then MJF's heel response to Starks' crowd-pleasing babyface promo was to kick him in the nuts and then walk out of the ring. Did this stand out to you like it did to me in terms of just really strong mic work, including, a star-making moment or star-elevating or star-affirming moment for Starks, depending on your perspective on him going into this?
It definitely did. It definitely, I thought, built the match incredibly well. It made me genuinely interested in Winter is Coming, which, you know, I've had a hard time really getting invested in these weekly Dynamite episodes as of late, and I thought they did a really good job here of getting people interested and invested in the match, of making Ricky Starks feel like a legitimate challenger to MJF's title. I sort of went through every emotion while I was watching the segment, because as I'm watching Max just kind of tear down Ricky Starks, I'm thinking, oh boy, like this is why MJF can't be a heel, because he's hitting a little too close to home on too many occasions, and the crowd is kind of getting behind him because what he's saying isn't that far from the truth. Or, you know, it might be a slightly exaggerated version of the truth, but it's still, it's edgy enough and it's pertinent enough and it's true enough for the crowd to start getting behind it. And MJF's delivery is so convincing that you kind of started to hear the crowd, you know, kind of that groundswell of support that MJF has often had to fight against and at times has not fought against, which led to a very convoluted character for a while. And then Ricky Starks got the mic, and my opinion immediately changed because he came at MJF with an equal amount of fire, and I wasn't sure that he had that in him. I didn't know that he could quite hang with MJF on that level. You know, you bring up or MJF brought up the comparisons to The Rock, comparing Ricky Starks to being a cheap Rock. And to me, this was, of course, on a lesser scale. I mean, I don't want to, you know, sound like MJF versus Ricky Starks is some kind of version of The Rock versus John Cena. But it had a little bit of that feeling of, you know, MJF in this situation is The Rock. He cuts this scathing, biting promo that you the crowd can sort of kind of get behind, and he's the guy that everybody looks to for the top end mic work. And then you go to Ricky Starks, or in this, you know, John Cena in this case, and he almost outlasts the guy. Just outdoes him in terms of his delivery and the insults that he was hurling Max's way. So I thought this worked incredibly well, and I think they set things up really nicely for next week. I do think that like you mentioned, the Dynamite Diamond Ring situation is a bit convoluted. Once they kind of said that, you know, there was going to be a shot at the ring, it seemed clear that Stark sort of had to win, because if, you know, MJF's not going to wrestle twice at Winter is Coming. So it was odd.
Yeah, I think the average Dynamite viewer doesn't know really what's going on for sure. They just know MJF and Starks yelled at each other, insulted each other, and it was compelling and entertaining, and then they're going to wrestle next week. The Diamond Ring doesn't mean much when you have your C team out there fighting in a battle royal for it. It's kind of beneath MJF to even have the ring when it's, you know, Butcher and the Blade and Lee Moriarty. Yeah. I mean, people you just, you know, Dalton Castle out of nowhere entering, not out of nowhere, well, sort of out of nowhere, an ROH guy. And then, like, they built, you know, several minutes late in the match around, well, early on they were talking about, you know, Dustin and building around him. But then, I don't know. It's like, Sean Dean. That's what I was trying to think of. And then they built the closing minutes around Sean Dean. It's like, when's the last time you saw Dustin on TV? I know he's a legend, but when's the last time they made you think anything about Sean Dean? So, it, you know, that's the downside of this, is I just think the Battle Royal came across as a bunch of prelim guys fighting over something that's poorly explained.
It was also really odd to see, like, people like Jungle Boy and Orange Cassidy just kind of be unceremoniously tossed. Like,
yep.
And to have them be tossed out on interference from guys who weren't in the match. Like, that always bothers me in Battle Royals, but particularly here, because, like, Jungle Boy, for example, was eliminated because of something that W. Morrissey did, and Morrissey remained at ringside through the rest of the match. So why wouldn't he just, if he can eliminate guys at will and it counts, why didn't he just get in the ring and throw Ricky Starks out for Ethan Page?
I know. I mean, I think having structure is important in a wrestling company, in the way matches are booked. That has not been something that has been a priority for AEW from the beginning. But when you, it makes the baby faces seem like fools for not cheating as often as the heels do, when the heels not only cheat to win and get ahead doing it, but also are complimented for doing so. I think you just have to, you know, pick your philosophy and then execute it well. And if your philosophy is faces and heels, and you're going to try to get heel heat by having heels cheat to win, you ought to have some sort of structure that where they're actually having to get away with it, as opposed to the company just sort of, you know, going, yeah, well, you know, we don't really have strict rules around here, so do what you must, do what you can.
And they could have really avoided the situation that I'm talking about too, if they had let Morrissey, you know, pull Jungle Boy out and eliminate him, but then had the referees force him to go to the back. Like, then you don't have that conundrum when it comes down to Page and Starks at the end. Like, at that point, Morrissey is gone, so he can't interfere. But when he's still out there, I'm just kind of thinking, like, well, why doesn't he just get in the ring and, you know, help Page?
And I do want, and this is, maybe this would be meta, or I don't know. I want a Battle Royal where everybody at the beginning of the Battle Royal runs out of the ring under the bottom rope and then hides under the ring. And just everyone does that, because if you're, one person can do it, they all ought to do it. And then that would force the company to go, wait, we need to have a count-out rule or a no-hiding-under-the-ring rule in a battle royal, so it doesn't just make a farce of everything. Right. I don't want to dwell on that. I don't think it's like a deal killer. If everything else is clicking and making sense, you can get away with some of this stuff. But it's not unimportant, and I think it does, you know, undercut the prestige and value of accomplishing something when it seems like the structure is so loose that it's sort of arbitrary who wins.
I mean, to be honest, I'm glad that I'm complaining about this, because the last time I was on a post show talking about AEW Dynamite, there were so many fundamental issues to complain about that we wouldn't have even had time to discuss something this trivial. So, like, the fact that we can even bring up a trivial, you know, quabble like this is a win in my book.
And by the way, I thought MJF was successful at getting a crowd to boo him. Like, I mean,
yeah.
But you have to have a babyface who can make a comeback. And that's why Starks is a really good opponent post Full Gear for MJF. Because MJF, from what I hear, is determined to be booed. Like, he doesn't want to be a tweener. He doesn't want the Shades of Grey nonsense that you know, if you build a whole company around Shades of Grey and have a very sports-like presentation, fine. But that's not what AEW is doing. So what they're trying to do, they should do well. And they had a good thing going with MJF as a heel until they, you know, dipped their toe in the water or dove in Long Island and showed fans how fun it would be to cheer him. And then, you know, whatever, all the other stuff happened. which we talk about constantly. But I thought this was a real statement promo from MJF, where it's fun for fans to boo him, and Starks was the perfect target because fans in Austin especially, but I think really almost anywhere, would have been behind Starks in that moment. And I like Starks just leaning back, taking it, kind of half grinning, just like, whatever, dish it out. I'm all revved up. It was like, you know, Cena Rock, where Rock did his promo. Cena was chilling out going, I got this. And next week he did more than meet Rock at his level. I thought he exceeded him. So really good moment for Starks. I don't know, you know, how long Starks will get a push and how long he'll even be in AEW. But if Tony Khan was waiting backstage with a contract for him or a raise or an extension, I wouldn't be shocked if he had one sitting around and have one typed up quickly for Ricky, because that was what, you know, speaking of Billy Corgan's NWA, we saw glimpses of with Starks. Going back to the NWA YouTube days that MJF derisively referred to. And this was Starks owning the ring and owning the show for a few minutes there.
Yeah, I came into this being the match thinking that, okay, yeah, this is probably a good direction for MJF for first babyface opponent coming out of Full Gear. And then when like I was saying earlier, when Max cut his side of the promo, I thought, okay, you know, maybe they're in over their head here. I mean, he went a little too hard, and then I was pleasantly surprised to see Ricky Starks then, you know, match him or even best him.
I was worried he's just going to walk past him and kind of shoulder check him and then leave. And I was like, wait, no, we want to hear from you. You're good at this. Let's meet the moment. And boy, did he meet, if not exceed, the moment.
And that would not have been good either.
After
MJF cut the kind of promo that he did and had the crowd kind of like mumbling a bit, that would have turned them. I really think that would have turned them to MJF.
Yeah. Yep. I think so too. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show and give out the phone numbers and email, and then we'll get back to our conversation here on the show. A lot more to talk about, some good, some bad. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 7th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program and the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch and PWTorch.com, and also the host of a variety of podcasts, some VIP exclusive like the Wade Keller Hotline, Post Pay-Per-View and PLE Roundtables, The Fix with Todd Martin that I host, and also Everything with Rich and Wade. And I also host free shows that are ad-free for our VIP members, such as this, the Wade Keller Post Show, and the Wade Keller Podcast. Speaking of Todd Martin, we'll be simulcasting the VIP show, The Fix, tomorrow as our flagship. So be sure to refresh the blue brand, our blue label show, tomorrow night to get the Thursday flagship. Tonight, we've got my two-hour-plus interview with Cowboy James Storm from 5 years ago going up, a real thorough walk through TNA history, because James Storm was there for pretty much all of it. And he talked about you know, watching AJ Styles rise and earn the respect of everybody. Some great backstage prank stories. So much more. If you missed that, or even if you heard it the first time, it's worth re-listening to. So check that out. If you're a TNA fan or just curious about the history of that company, with a first-person backstage insight as Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff and so many other big names passed through, Kurt Angle too, James Storm really delivered on that promo in terms of sharing great stories. And you have to learn why he was a little late to the interview. It's a great story. What he was doing, very fitting of his gimmick. So that's on our Blue Logo Show. Just search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe to the Red and Blue Logo Shows both. They're both free. And while you're at it, subscribe to our PW Torch Daily Cast and the PW Torch VIP Free Sample podcast feed. You can do that by searching PW Torch and subscribe to the Daily Cast logo and also the PW Torch VIP logo. It's black and gray, and that'll get you some free samples of our VIP shows. You can also upgrade to a VIP membership using your Apple account directly on your iPhone when you subscribe to that feed, if you want to unlock all the VIP shows and all of these shows with the ads and plugs removed, which is very nice if you're a regular listener. All right, the other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire. He is a PWTorch.com contributor and a frequent co-host on WWE and AEW post shows. Brandon, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Great to have you, too. If you would like to join the conversation, give us a call. The only person on hold right now is Ryan from Cumberland, so it's not going to be a long wait. A lot of people have called up. If you want to move yourself into the caller queue, push 1, and you can be one of our first callers. If you're listening on our live stream and haven't called up yet, you are invited to do so. Our number is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard. That tells us that you want to be on the show. And then we'll bring you on and we can talk Dynamite. You don't have to agree with us. If we have strong opinions and you want to push back, consider yourself not just invited, but encouraged to do so. If you agree with us, yeah, feel free to call too, of course. All right. You can also email the show if that's easier for you. This applies to people, of course, who download the show the next morning or the next afternoon and can't listen to our live stream at WadeKellerPostShow.com. If you want to still be part of the show while you're watching Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown each week, give us a call or drop us an email, I should say, WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. We'll be getting to some emails later on as the show progresses. All right, so we'll have Ryan stand by. We've got 682 who did push 1. We'll go to them. 682, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. Six, eight, two. You pushed 1. This is you. Are you there? All right. Maybe somebody accidentally pushed 1. We will instead encourage others to push 1 or give us a call, and we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, you are up. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? You got a full slate of topics that we haven't covered yet.
I have a question on the commercial that aired on this Power Slap promotion that's coming about next year. Do you see them doing a cross promotion with AEW, since we've already seen a lot of UFC fighters on previously? Do you think this could be a way to help Dana get his name out?
I have no idea. Do you have any thoughts, Brandon?
What was the commercial?
There's a new federation that Dana White's going to promote. It's called Power Slap. I guess you try to knock the guy out with the slap to the face.
Okay. Dana White. I didn't hear the Dana White part. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the promotion. Are they a Warner property?
I would imagine if they're on the Warner TV shit.
It's on TBS.
Okay, it's going to be on TBS. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, it's certainly possible. I know that there's already been some cross promotion in terms of AEW talent and whatnot appearing on other Warner properties, and so given that I don't want to say it's the same type of competition, but given that it both involves combat of sort, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me, but it also wouldn't surprise me if Dana White wants nothing to do with them.
All right, what else have you got?
Hey, another question I have is on this stipulation on the Chris Jericho match where Claudia has to join up with the Appreciation Society. Do you see the Real Americans getting back together as a tag team, Jack Hagar and Claudio possibly being like a formal tag team again, or do you think it's just not going to happen because they're not going to get along very well?
What do you think, Brandon?
I think it's definitely within the realm of possibility. I mean, if Jericho is going to win and continue his reign, which seems like the odds-on direction here, because it seems like they still want to get more out of Jericho doing his, you know, the Ring of Honor shtick. If they're going to go that direction and they're not going to try to find a way out of the stipulation with Claudio having to join the JAS, then I think reuniting with Hager in some form or fashion makes the most amount of sense from a storyline perspective. But I still don't think it's a great idea. I think that Hager is defined a certain way within AEW, and I mean, the purple hat gimmick sort of makes him a bit of a joke. I see him as the lowest man on the JAS totem pole, and given who else is in that faction, I mean, that's certainly not a compliment. So I, I just view Claudio as higher than that. I feel like it would be such a step down for him at this point. I hope that's not the direction that they're going, but it wouldn't surprise me if it is.
All right, what else, Ryan?
Heavy question on Jade. As she's been wrestling in some tag team matches lately, what do you think the odds are that her first loss will be in a tag team match to set up a possible contender for her championship?
Brandon, what do you think?
It's certainly a trope that they can use. I mean, WWE loves to do that. We haven't seen quite as much of it with AEW, but I wouldn't rule it out. I was happy to see Jade on Dynamite tonight because I think that her character has been relegated to Rampage far too often. And so I thought it was good to get her on the main show where there are a lot more eyes on the product. I didn't think the match was particularly good, but that's okay. I mean, I don't think it needed to be. I think getting Jade another showcase win was a net positive. I think that when you beat Jade, you want to do it in a big match for the title. I don't think that you want to have such a special moment come in a tag team match because they've really, really built her up to a pretty significant degree at this point. And I think that it would be a disservice to both her and the person who's going to beat her to have it just come in a tag team match versus a big singles match for the TBS title.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ryan, anything else?
I have a question on William Regal. Who do you think he might have had an issue with in management that he thought was immature? You think it was the Young Bucks and Megar or even Tony Khan himself? Or am I missing someone that possibly could have ticked him off a little bit?
I have no idea, and I wouldn't want to speculate. I just think Regal should say so if those are his feelings. I mean, there's plenty to choose from. I thought I was fascinated, Brandon, by Moxley's reaction to that weird William Regal promo with Tony Schiavone filmed weeks ago in case something happens to me. It's like an old TV show or it's, you know, like the TV show where the person, you know, films their will that only, you know, plays in front of the family and friends after they die. I thought it was corny and convoluted to say, yeah, I'm recording this if something happens to me because, you know, something's going to happen to me. And then he tried to explain why he cost Moxley the title, and Moxley and Claudio just sort of looked at each other afterwards, and Moxley just moved on to other things. I don't think it's difficult to figure out that Moxley thinks the finish at Full Gear was atrocious, and Regal's involvement in that and the way that it was thought through and executed put him in a position to try to make chicken salad, and he wasn't in the mood to even participate in trying. And he's just sort of rolling his eyes, shrugging his shoulders, and moving on. That was my take. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, it was a weird moment. One of the weirder moments on the show. I was initially quite intrigued when Schiavone was saying on commentary during an earlier match in the night that he had something to play with Regal that would bring some clarity to the situation with Moxley. And then they rolled out that clip, and like you addressed, I mean, it felt corny. It felt over the top. It felt too cute for the situation. It just felt like AEW being keenly aware that the way that they handled the finish and the fallout wasn't particularly well received, and so they were trying to do some cleanup. I think it made it worse. I just don't think that what Regal said made enough sense. I don't think that the way the Blackpool Combat Club was left in the ring to just sort of ponder the situation afterwards did them any favors. And then Moxley just completely glazing over the entire topic to talk about, you know, the next couple of nights being good nights for pro wrestling. I just didn't think that it worked particularly well. Like you said, it seemed like he was very much over the situation. It didn't work for me. And I think the crowd reaction kind of bore out that opinion. It didn't seem to click with them. And I think that, you know, Moxley's reaction probably had a lot to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mox is thinking, let's just move on. Let's not draw attention to it. I mean, the fact that Moxley has yet to address what Regal did to him and be angry about it or anything, it's just, I'm a badass and I'll fight anybody and let me go have a match against Takeshita next Friday or on Friday. And it feels like he has no interest in participating in what this storyline became. And, you know, that was one of the things I liked about the MJF promo is it just moved on. You know, it's like there. You know, I've been saying, you know, I said last week's MJF promo is just, you know, clean up in aisle three, clean up in aisle four, just bring the mop and the bucket and try to explain things and you know, address the firm and all that stuff. And it was like, okay, nice try. Some things worked, some didn't. Now let's just move on. Let's get past this. And Mox just seems so ready to move past it too, which is a shame that, you know, even he can't figure out how to make sense of it. But I understand.
Really, I mean, I think they had a way out. Like, Regal, we know now Regal is not coming back. Like, he's headed back to WWE. Tony Khan has confirmed it. I feel like it would have been pretty simple for Moxley to just essentially say, look, man, like, I'm still really pissed off at Regal. You know, it's hard for me to forgive this kind of stuff, but I didn't want MJF to nearly kill the man. Like, you know, just some sort of form of solidarity with the rest of Blackpool Combat Club, which he's still demonstrating, but doing so without acknowledging the elephant in the room, which is that he really wanted to beat the heck out of Regal, and instead, you know, MJF did it for him, more or less, or not for him, but, you know, took him out. It got too cute and too convoluted for reasons that it didn't have to be, and I think he could have gotten out of it by just saying something as simple as that. But to do it the way that they did it tonight, it just sent the message that, like you said, I don't want anything to do with this. Let's move on.
And, you know, he put thought into it. And, you know, Moxley told me in my Torch Talk with him, my interview with him, that, you know, he would take WWE material, fight against it if he disagreed with it. He'd speak out. He'd explain why he didn't think it was good. But once the final call was made, he'd make the best of it.
Yeah.
And he just seems, this seems like even he's not willing to do that to this. I mean, unless he thinks the best thing he can do to embrace, the best thing he can do is to ignore it and move on. So, yeah. Anyway, Ryan, I appreciate the call. Good day from you.
Thanks for taking it.
Sure thing. Yep. I hope they don't do a bit with Hager and Claudio Cesaro. I just, you know, we heard the We the People chant tonight, and you know, if that's to taunt him, that's one thing. But getting a chant like that is not a sign you're over. It's just a sign that fans like chants. And if they're trying to make fun of him with a, you know, sports entertainment chant, that's one thing. I don't know what they're doing. But AEW does not want to look like they're reliving old WWE storylines and gimmicks.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see what the upside would be to bringing back a failed tag team and a failed gimmick in WWE and trying to rekindle it in 2022 when the two guys are on such clearly different distinctive paths. I mean, if you're going to throw Claudio into a tag team with someone at Jake Hager's level at this point in time, you're essentially admitting that WWE was right about Claudio. And I think that they have sent a very different message during his time there. I just don't think you want to do that.
All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. Got a bunch of people lined up now on the phone lines. We'll give 682 another chance here. 682, this should be you. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Joshua Johnson, and I'm from Arlington, Texas.
Hey, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling, Josh. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Oh, yeah. I was watching that show. I wanted to go down to Austin and watch it, but, of course, you know, couldn't get down there. But it was a good show. I was thinking about MJF. Y'all was talking about MJF. What do y'all think about him doing a little bit more wrestling than just promos? He's a great promo guy, but I'd rather see him wrestle more and not be like, you know, some other superstars and keep the title for 3 years or whatever and do more wrestling. What do you think?
I'm with you on that. I'd like to see him wrestle more often. It's weird how few matches he's had. Brandon, does MJF wrestling make him seem like less of a star? Or is it needed at this stage of his career in order to earn the respect of some fans who maybe aren't quite sure what he's all about in the ring? Because he's impressive in the ring. You know, he's really good at what he does. He looks good. But his, you know, his approach with Tony Khan's approval has been make every match he has seem like a special attraction. And, you know, Moxley's sort of taking the opposite view, Danielson the opposite view, which is just feed me opponents. I want to have good matches and, you know, quote, work in the ring for my money, not just on the mic.
I'm okay with it. And the reason I'm fine with it is because I think he has cultivated it to be so much a part of his gimmick that he only works matches. He only wrestles in big money situations because that's what he is so expensive. He commands so much money to wrestle that a company, even a company run by a billionaire, can only afford to pay him to wrestle on occasion. And I think that works for his gimmick. And I don't think that you want a character like that just wrestling random matches every week or every other week on Dynamite. And I say that specifically because that's so much of what AEW has become. So many guys and girls on the roster just wrestle random opponents week after week. And sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not so good. Sometimes, you know, I'm very critical of them for some of the lack of storytelling. And one thing that I can't knock them for is the level at which they go to tell stories with MJF. And I may not agree with everything that they do. I mean, we just talked about the convoluted nature of the storyline with Regal and Moxley and how that didn't end particularly well for anyone. But I at least appreciate how much of a story they told and the length that they went to tell it. So because there is so much good wrestling on a week-to-week basis on AEW and such a diverse talent roster that they already have trouble using, I'm okay with one of their guys, even though he is the top guy, being someone that you rarely get to see wrestle, because I think it makes people look forward to the matches more, and I think it makes the matches mean more when they happen.
I think that is the argument for it, for sure. And I don't think it's without merit, and obviously it's kind of worked for him to this point. you know, he is the world champion a few years into his run, and he's not somebody, you know, who has WrestleMania, MSG, or Tokyo Dome credentials, or Reseda, California credentials, so... Josh, back to you. You can follow up on that or bring something else up.
I'm going to the ROH show this Saturday. Of course, I live in Arlington. So I want to get y'all a take on an afternoon show. Tony Khan was talking about it earlier on his, you know, Ring of Honor broadcast media coming up.
Right.
And he was talking about the lack of, like, there's, like, seven matches now after the FTR and the Briscoes got added on. And then you have, you know, so you have seven, total seven matches. So where's the matches for 0 hour? Do you think there's going to be any matches for 0 hour? And are we going to see, like, Bandido or, you know, like Bryan Danielson? I mean, the people who, you know, can really push the show. You have college football coming up. Afternoon, you have, you know, you have several things going on TV. You also have NXT Deadline that I'm also going to be watching on Peacock. But yeah, just how are you going to get that show to be must watch?
Well, I don't know if he's going to add a big name like Bryan Danielson and not advertise it ahead of time. He's got ROH history. I think the lineup is strong enough to be a good ROH pay-per-view. I'm not sure it's strong enough to command the price they're asking for the pay-per-view, which I know is a bit of a controversy. And I don't know if they haven't announced anything for 0 hour. I would assume they're going to put a match on there. I also assume it's not a big enough deal that advertising ahead of time is going to make a big difference to how many people tune in. But right now, yeah, seven matches, and they've got, you know, the ROH title match, the ROH tag team title match, the ROH pure title match, the ROH women's title match, the ROH tag TV title match, the ROH six-man title match. A lot of title matches on that show, six out of seven, I believe, are for titles, and then you've got the Strickland and Lee against Shane Taylor and JD Griffey match, which was set up on Rampage last Friday. Brandon, what do you think? Do you think there's any significant names with ROH history on the AEW roster who will either fill out this card on the main part or on the pre-show?
I think they're going to go forward as is. I think that they've got the number of matches they need for, you know, a formidable length show. I think that throwing the Briscoes and FTR in the double dog collar or whatever it is that they announced at the end of the show tonight, I think that adds quite a bit of juice to this card. It felt to me like a direct response to sort of the backlash to the pricing earlier this week when people were kind of looking at this card and saying, you know, what am I paying $40 for? Well, I think FTR and the Briscoes was Tony Khan's answer to that. So I think that it's a reasonable card for an ROH show. The problem, of course, is the way ROH has been presented. Not having a television product of their own, they're relegated to AEW, and Tony Khan has, I think, rightfully pulled back on the ROH feature on AEW TV because it got to be too much. So a lot of these matches just don't feel like they have much behind them, and I don't know how you would have fixed that going in because, again, I vehemently disagree with dedicating significant TV time to the ROH roster. So I certainly wouldn't have wanted to see it handled the way that they handled the pay-per-view back in July. So it makes it really challenging to put together a card that people are excited to pay to see when a lot of these wrestlers they either haven't seen before or they can see them weekly on AEW TV. So it's tough. It's a tough sell. I think that this is a card that will be really fun for people to tune into live. And I'm sure it'll be a good show for the people that are willing to shell out the money. But I just think that, you know, the vast majority of fans are going to look at this and say, it's the holiday season. Army Navy game is on, you know, an hour before, which AEW inadvertently promoted tonight on commentary. Like, that's not a great look. You're promoting counter programming to ROH pay-per-view. And I just think people are going to look at this and say, you know, again, Army Navy game, holiday season, $40 for this card. I can skip it.
Yeah, there's a dilemma when you want to sell this pay-per-view, but you have so many matches without a real firm connection to the typical Dynamite viewer. You know, Jericho did some sound bites in a video package, but, you know, present to hype the match. Claudio sort of was, but sort of wasn't. And he was in a match, but it seemed like it was that the match was more set up to set up Garcia and Wheeler Yuta. And then, you know, Mercedes Martinez, we didn't hear from her. Samoa Joe cut a nice promo. Juice Robinson had a brief promo on Rampage on Friday, but nothing that, you know, I think is going to get anyone invested in this match who doesn't have a history with him and already liked him or cared about him. And, you know, Shane Taylor trying to quickly set up a match with Strickland and Lee. I mean, it's like they're talking about things that happened a long time ago, and I think AEW fans who want to watch AEW wrestlers who are going to be on Dynamite every week aren't going to suddenly care about Shane Taylor, much less JD Griffey. I mean, there's just a lot. And then Dalton Castle and the boys against the Embassy. I mean, you know, what year is it? And so the biggest selling point is the match that got mentioned at the very end, but not fully confirmed, which is, you know, I mean, people assume it's going to happen, but the double dog collar match. I mean, it's fine. I mean, I think Garcia Yuta is going to be really good. I think Joe and Juice should be good. Obviously the double dog collar match is going to be a selling point for some people. Jericho, Claudio, you know, Jericho continues to deliver. Claudio's still really good. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that it jumps out. It's one of the things where if they build it up properly, you're building up a bunch of wrestlers who you're not even going to promote again for months, if ever, on AEW TV. And you're going to upset AEW fans and maybe hurt your ratings. So you're taking a hit on the pay-per-view buys by not going all in promoting it, which is why promoting a different brand on your show is just, you know, fraught with peril. It is not, it's not easily executed. Yeah, Brad.
I just think that the price point is an obstacle they can't overcome here because you're, this isn't the early to mid 2000s anymore when every wrestling company is asking you to pay $30 to $50 to watch their monthly pay-per-view. Like, yeah. WWE really ruined the format and created an expectation that pay-per-views won't cost you a ton of money anymore. And there is a large section of diehard AEW fans who have made the commitment to spend $50 four times a year on AEW pay-per-views. And I don't think that that is unreasonable for the quality of show that they typically provide and the level of talent you see on those shows. But when you are asking for only $10 less for a show that essentially features some AEW guys and a bunch of guys who are barely on TV and haven't really been featured on TV for months because Ring of Honor hasn't had their own television show in months, that's a big ask. I mean, you're essentially – you're valuing your main roster major four-time-a-year shows at only $10 more? That just seems like – you're asking, you know, either too little for AEW pay-per-views, which I don't think is the case,
yeah,
or far too much for Ring of Honor. I think that if you approach these Ring of Honor shows, at least until they have a television deal and they are producing content on a weekly basis where they can really build up these matches and have a solidified roster, I think asking, you know, $24.99 for these shows is about the cap.
I agree. All right, Josh, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I got one last thing, and I appreciate it, guys, for y'all time and everything. But just to touch base on what he just said about an ROH feature being on television and whatever not, what do y'all think should be the day, like Monday, Tuesday, so forth, for it to come on? What do you think will be the best day, and will they go before WWE, or is he going to maybe go against while WWE is on, like maybe against Raw or NXT or SmackDown? You get what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's tough. I mean, wrestling used to be destination programming, like late morning, early afternoon, or late afternoon, early evening on weekends. And I know ROH has done that before. And that's a little bit more wide open, but you run into the same issue with how much sports competition there is on basic cable and network television in those spots too. I don't think there's a great spot for ROH. I think if you say, oh, we're going to put it on a one-hour show on a different network, but an hour before Dynamite starts, you're going to wear out your fans. You know, we saw with 205 Live, you can't keep fans, you know, like at a taping afterwards or even tuned in afterwards. It's a saturated market, so it's a tough call where to strategically put an ROH dedicated TV show. I'm frankly just not sure there's room for it in the marketplace right now. I'm not against it being a full-fledged promotion, ideally with a different booker. Tony can kind of oversee things, but I'd rather see someone else's vision get a chance to, you know, book a different set of wrestlers. But At this point, I just think with Raw and NXT and Dynamite and Impact and SmackDown and Rampage, it's just I'm not quite sure what the market's going to be for it. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I think that the fact that a TV deal hasn't been struck yet and AEW has been playing this game for as long as they have, incorporating them on the main roster TV, I think that tells the story about what kind of market there is for it. I mean, as soon as Tony made the announcement that he had purchased the rights of Ring of Honor, it sounded like a TV deal was imminent. And Tony has said on multiple occasions that you know, a deal was imminent or they had plans that were very imminent. And yet, month after month, we don't get any sort of announcement, which makes me wonder, you know, whether there is a market for this. I don't think that the day and time so much is going to matter, because I very much view any weekly Ring of Honor product that is going to exist is going to be the niche kind of product that Impact has become, where people don't necessarily make it destination viewing. It's more of something that you DVR and catch up on in free time. I think that is the market that Ring of Honor is going to find itself in. And I mean, of course, your dedicated audience, your diehard audience that will tune in. But I just don't think that it's going to be something that people are watching live as it airs.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Do you think Friday night, like, you know, Rampage comes on at 9 p.m., at least Central Time, you know, depends on where you're at. But at least in Texas where I'm at, it comes on at 9. Do you think coming on 1 hour before and having a two-hour show and going ahead with SmackDown or come on at 10 o'clock? I know you have SmackDown for 2 hours, but they've been doing really good the last couple of times in the ratings department, and to see where they can go. If they do really good shows with ROH for that 1 hour, that'd be really cool to see if they can go head-to-head with WWE on a weekly basis.
I mean, Rampage is just dying in the ratings right now. And
yeah.
I just don't know if Friday night is a bad night anyway, and then you go against the number one most watched show with a minor league version of, you know, of what Tony Khan owns and operates. I think you're just asking for trouble. And I don't think there's a network out there that's going to want to go head-to-head with Fox Broadcast Network SmackDown, Brandon.
Yeah, especially a promotion the
size
of Ring
of
Honor.
That's all I have, guys. I do appreciate y'all's time. And
yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
So I was going to say thank y'all for y'all's time, I appreciate it. And I'm going to stay on the phone so I can hear what that guy was just about to say because I'm interested in what he's got to say. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Okay. That's all right, Jeff. Thanks. Brandon, that is your name, I believe, that guy. That's okay. We got a lot of co-hosts. Brandon, you can finish your thought there.
I answer to that guy. It's fine. I was going to say, I don't think that you want to run your third, what amounts to your third, well, I mean, really AEW's fifth television product, different brand, but still under the AEW umbrella, against the largest wrestling television brand in the country. I mean, yes, Raw is longer running, but SmackDown is on, you know, national network television. So I don't think that you want to run head to head with them. I kind of wonder, and this is almost what I thought Tony may have been going for from the get-go, is given that AEW is a Warner Discovery property, we know that Warner Discovery is itching for content for HBO Max, but we also know that there is a lot of turmoil within that company right now and what the future direction is going to be for HBO Max. If the new people in charge get their way, the rumor was that it was going to shift far more to reality-based, to a reality-based product, less of your general, you know, highbrow scripted television. That stuff would be relegated back to the HBO proper brand, and the HBO Max brand would settle more into Discovery properties. So with that idea in mind, I wonder if Tony was potentially, you know, saw the writing on the wall, knew that change was coming within Warner Discovery, and is maybe hoping that he can get Ring of Honor a deal on this new iteration of HBO Max. And the reason I think it could potentially be attractive is because they become the first major wrestling promotion to have a full weekly streaming television show. And it could be really cheap for Warner Discovery to produce if they take the tapings to Orlando, where they've been taping AEW Dark. They could then tape multiple episodes in one shot, the way that NXT did for a long time. And then you can have a backlog of episodes ready to go, and you could potentially, it doesn't have to be this way, but even if you didn't want to go the route of weekly episodes, they could release seasons of Ring of Honor and build up to a pay-per-view on a certain date that would air live on HBO Max. And AEW and Ring of Honor in conjunction can say, hey, season one of Ring of Honor is dropping on this date, and this is our pay-per-view. Make sure you catch up on season one before the date of the pay-per-view.
And I just wonder, and I mean, everything changes with all the changes going on with HBO Max and Discovery, but do they want the – would ROH be the fifth or sixth brand, most biggest wrestling brand in the country going into this. And, behind the Raw brand, the SmackDown brand, NXT, AEW, and then, Impact in there somewhere, drawing, viewers and a mainstay brand for decades now. Do they want that to be their introduction to that? And I'm skeptical of dropping like a whole season at once just because of the idea of the cadence of I'll face you in 2 weeks after what you just did to me. There's a sort of you can't play like 17 football games in a row over a 3-day period and then drop them all at once. There's stories that are told because of the time in between fights and matches. They could rethink things and do things differently. We saw, Lucha Underground completely change things.
There'd have to be a shift in formatting. It couldn't be the most traditional wrestling product. But maybe that's a way to give them a specialized audience, too. Yeah.
All right, very good. Thanks, Josh. We'll go next to air code 214. 214, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Brody from Dallas, Texas.
Hey, Brody, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, so a couple points. I thought overall, I thought Dynamite was a strong show. I felt like there was a lot of intensity on the show, like from the first Ricky Starks promo to the Samoa Joe Darby match. We really enjoyed those two. The other piece I kind of wanted to touch on was the Jade match. So I think I'm probably one of the few callers that's like super invested into the Jade story. So
yeah.
I just feel like there was a step missing in the storytelling. So I think there was some nuanced storytelling with the whole Kiera not getting the belt back and the whole Nyla Rose thing. I felt like there was a promo missing. Like I wanted something from Kiera to be like, to really like explain that piece of it. Like to me, when Kiera and Jay were facing off in the ring tonight, I kind of wanted that to be a bigger moment. Like there was kind of a pop, but I think it was a little lacking because of that storytelling. I'll pause there.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Especially because so much of what Jay does is on Rampage, and I thought the way Kiera was kicked out of the baddies, it just felt flippant and not really explained or followed up on. And then here they are, and, they build to, the hot tag of Jade entering late, and she went after Kiera Hogan. And, I mean, I think the match was structured to make that a moment, but then it's in a blink of an eye, Cargill's pinning Rain, and it's over, and there wasn't really follow-up. And, I mean, half-baked is a phrase that's used so much, and I think it sort of lost its meaning. But the phrase, I think, just means, like, you can have, like, something raw in its natural state, or you can fake it to its full, till it's finished. But if you just go halfway in between, it's just muck. And that's kind of what this is. It's like, if you're going to do it, go all the way with it and make a big deal out of it. Or I shouldn't say make a big deal out of it, but fully explain it. Give it room to breathe, follow up on it, make sure that the audience watching a payoff match is up to speed on it. Ideally, they would witness it themselves in some form or fashion, not just have Excalibur catch them up or a promo trying to accomplish eight things in 30 seconds. And this is one of those examples where I think AEW should do fewer angles. And the ones that they do, they dedicate enough time to that they get everything they can out of it. And this is a good example of a storyline that's like, well, the wrestlers feel to justify their TV time, there needs to be some sort of drama or angle or twist or swerve or breakup. I just was shaking my head at hints of House of Black last week teasing breaking up already. Just stop it. Like, it's okay to just, like, have matches without an angle that feels half-baked being the reason for it. And I think this is a good example of what we see too often with AEW. So it's a good point, Brody. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought that as good as it was to see Jade on Dynamite versus Rampage, because it seems like, AEW doesn't have a roster split, but it seems like they have a soft roster split. And Jade is someone who very much tends to reside on Rampage. And I don't think that is a good thing, because as important as it is to have stars on Friday nights, I think that by relegating someone to Friday nights almost exclusively, you send the message that they're not a star. So I think it's more important to establish Jade well on Dynamite and then let her, you know, kind of run Rampage. So to bring her on tonight with this feud, or what has become a feud because of her unceremoniously kicking out Kiera Hogan, I thought that there needed to be more to make it feel like it meant something other than just a way to get Jade on Dynamite. And that's what it felt like. It seemed like AEW's intention was to give this a moment to breathe on the flagship show because they felt like they had put Kiera Hogan in a position to, you know, stand up to Jade. But the reality was that because she appears so infrequently on Dynamite and is usually relegated to Rampage, that it just felt like a showcase for Jade, for her to squash, you know, the opponents and move on. So, yeah, they tried to set up a couple of moments there for Hogan to kind of get, like, the babyface spot, but it didn't really amount to much. It just felt like a pretty standard Jade Cargill match.
Yep. Brody, back to you for any follow-up or another topic.
I'll switch to another topic. What was my next topic? Let me think about that for a second.
While you're thinking, I will comment on what you – no, that's okay. While you're thinking of that, I will say I did think there was good content on the show, and I thought Samoa Joe and Darby Allin felt like it was good enough in the 11 minutes they gave it in the post-match that it seems like it – like that would have been – it doesn't fit the ROH pay-per-view, but I think that would have been more of an attraction than – Joe and Juice, and it seems like they can do follow-up on that. I'm not sure if Wardlow is a step up or not in the eyes of fans, but the match itself with the two very different styles of wrestlers was good, and the tag match was solid for what it was, too, and the main event match with FTR and the Acclaimed was very good. The Acclaimed continue to look like they belong in the ring with top-tier guys like FTR who are established, and it seems out of place when they're in the mix with people who are lower card, and a clean win over FTR here is, and which should be a topic we cover in a little more depth as the show goes on here, Brandon, is a statement booking move also. So definitely some good content. I mean, I thought the battle royal was just, you know, wasn't offensive, but it wasn't good. It wasn't like a good battle royal, but.
Before we get too far removed too from the Joe and Darby Allin match too, I just want to mention that kind of shed light too on the situation they have with Final Battle, in that Samoa Joe has this really strong match with Darby Allin, and then immediately Wardlow comes out to make the save, and they're hyping up an eventual match between Joe and Wardlow, which I think is where the attention is right now, because, you know, they're in an ongoing program. Like they avoided doing that one-on-one at Full Gear so that they could come back to it. And instead of being able to talk about Joe and Wardlow eventually having a one-on-one match, they immediately had to pivot to talking about Samoa Joe versus Juice Robinson, which has nothing behind it.
I know, exactly. And that's three different opponents, and the one they want you to pay for is the one you're probably least interested
yeah.
in seeing, so that's okay. Brody, back to you if you recall what other point you wanted to bring up.
Yes, I do. I think you already kind of touched on that point, but the Regal promo, I feel like you didn't really need this on the show. Like, I think you kind of touched on it earlier. I think you had an out. I think this promo basically just raised more questions than answers. And I think he would have been better off just kind of going with the previous angle with Regal being out and just moving on as well. And then my
let me comment on that, Brody, so I don't forget. Shivani should have looked at Regal and said, you can teach. I respect the hell out of you. I've known you for decades. There's better ways to teach friends of yours a lesson, a life lesson, a professional career lesson, than costing one of your dear friends the world title. And I think as time goes on, if you don't realize that yet, you're going to realize your mistake. I think there needs to be a voice saying that Regal, who's supposed to be sympathetic, and Bryan Danielson's at his side right now in the hospital, is the story they're telling, he cost Moxley the world title. He like desecrated the integrity of a world championship. That's how it should be seen. We can't ever normalize that kind of finish where you have someone walking around with a world title who won it under those circumstances and is supposed to be taken seriously. I mean, the major storyline should be MJF isn't world champion until he wins without a blindside brass knuckles attack on his challenger in this case, as opposed to the champion. And AEW is just acting like, oh, it's, you know, it's not just time to move on. MJF's our champ. He found a way to win. Let's not hold it against him. It was creative. And he took the initiative, all these weird words that, you know, get used to frame what by booking design is meant to get heel heat on MJF. And certainly MJF is going for heel heat. And instead, it's like he's walking around with a belt and Regal's talking about teaching lessons and not owning the idea that a much bigger thing happened, which is Moxley was cheated unfairly out of a world title that he worked hard to win. And that's not even a plot point in with Regal. It's not designed to be a plot point for the announcers, including Shivani, the interviewer, to discuss. And it cheapens the world title. That's the effect. It makes the world title seem unimportant, that that's not an outrage to everybody in the company, or, you know, so many people in the company at the top who should care about the integrity and the meaning of being a world champion. And Mox just doesn't even know what to do with it, as we covered earlier. I mean, it's just like, I'm just going to pivot away from this mess.
And Regal's lasting message to Moxley and company was, you always need to be one step ahead. So in effect, Regal is telling Moxley that what? Moxley should have turned on Regal before Regal turned on Moxley, which, I mean, I guess that's a fine message, except when Regal immediately then says that he's still Blackpool Combat Club and will be forever.
And the irony of saying that when he gets caught from behind by MJF when he wasn't a step ahead or didn't have eyes
right
on the back of his head, and that promo was recorded before that happened. I don't know, that maybe they had that irony in mind. I assume that was recorded after the fact and pretending it was before everything. But either way, do they know how, like, weird that is, that Regal sitting here preaching, I needed to teach my guys and always have eyes in the back of their head. And he's the one who got hit by MJF, who was completely untrustworthy.
Right. And
so,
and I mean, the thing is MJF, the only thing Regal did was change the weapon that MJF used.
Yep.
I mean, he was preparing to hit Moxley in the head with the Dynamite Diamond ring, which presumably would have had the same or at least a similar effect. So, doesn't work.
Yeah. Keep things simple. I mean, it's just like wrestling is about wrestlers who are really good at having simulated fights in the ring, just going to war with different styles and different techniques, like we saw Darby and Joe. Let their craft tell the story, and then they build their characters. They're larger-than-life characters. They have charisma. There's a reason they've been chosen. There's a lot of good wrestlers who don't have charisma and don't connect with the fans. The ones who are on national TV getting a push generally are people with charisma who have connected with the fans. Just let them cut promos and let them wrestle and stop overbooking this stuff. And, I mean, the knots that they tied themselves into that they're now spending all this time trying to untie is just – it's bogging things down. And, you know, I say it when booking gets convoluted, I just want to get past the pay-per-view and move on and simplify things. And this was a weird choice to step back and try to explain away something that, if it can be explained, this wasn't the way to do it.
Nuanced and complicated can be a really, really effective type of storytelling if you're good at telling it. And I think AEW went for that here and just failed at just about all levels, You have something like the Bloodline story. Like, the Bloodline story is very nuanced. So much of the week-to-week story that's told by the Usos and Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns is done in a very subtle way with gestures and looks and glances. All of that stuff is nuanced and subtled, and there's complicated layers to it. That is really effective, and it can be great storytelling in wrestling. But if you just do complicated for the sake of complicated, it almost never works.
Yep, I agree. Brody, back to you for that other point.
My last point, and then I'll hop off and listen. So I've been to every show AEW has put on in Dallas. I went to the last ROH show as well. This is the first show I'm not going to get a ticket to, mainly because two reasons. One, they moved the venue and the ticket prices are like 1.5x what they were at the Curtis Caldwell Center. That's one. And then two, just from a storyline perspective, I don't see any big takeaway or like big storyline capping off at this event. So I just kind of want to put that out there as well. So thanks for taking my call.
How many shows have you been? Thanks, Brian. How many shows have you been to?
Every show in Dallas. So I think it's like 5, and then there are LA shows as well. So I think that's 6 total.
Wow. Have you seen the crowds decrease over time, or has it been pretty steady or up and down?
I would say at the very first show, I haven't seen it reach that capacity, but it's remained pretty steady. I would say the last 2 or 3 shows are probably at like 80% of like that first show. So
yeah,
maybe some slight decline, but I personally felt
bad.
Like each show got a little bit worse in terms of the quality, but
yeah,
that's my personal assessment.
All right. Well, good. Brody, we'll hear from you again.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Good talking to you. Absolutely.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Okay, our number, 347-215-8558. We've had a couple first-time callers. You can be one of them, too. Push 1 on your keypad when you call to join the conversation this week, or if you're listening to us on delay, consider joining us live. You can find a link to the live stream at pwtorch.com at the top and bottom of my reports every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, respectively. And also, you can find a link on Twitter at PWTorch near the end of the show. I put up a link with the phone number, the email, and the link to the live stream. And if all else fails, you can go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the live stream. Lots of ways to find us and listen live and join us. All right, up next is Chris in Oklahoma. Chris, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? Getting some feedback, Chris.
Oh, I do? Sorry.
Yep, we were hearing some feedback there, Chris, but I think I don't know if you can adjust if your phone's close. But we're still getting some interference. It's like your phone is up against some electronic equipment or something.
Just a second.
Yeah.
Is that better?
It's like a million times better. All right, Chris, what's
right,
sorry,
I was trying to use a headset while I was listening, so I went out to call it to my phone out of my head. I'm just curious what y'all's thoughts were on MJF's promo when he actually used Rock's catchphrases during his promo, and then the comparison between him and Roddy Piper. And I was wondering what y'all's thoughts were on that, and I'll leave it at that.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I mean, MJF's been compared to Roddy Piper. Ricky Starks sure seems inspired by The Rock. The Rock wasn't the first person to do a lot of things that Rock did, but Rock introduced some original things that really caught on and certainly has certain mannerisms that are, linked to him forever. But I have never looked at Ricky, Brandon, and thought, he's a Rock imitator. Who was the guy in TNA early on who was a Rock imitator? He was shorter, but I just saw his name the other day. I'm drawing a blank right now, but maybe it'll come to me. But like, there's many people where you're like, oh yeah, you're just doing a Rock. You're a Rock copycat. I don't even think Ricky's like a Rock derivative, but I think his charisma and his mannerism just sort of, if you're going to draw a comparison, I get that. I can't think of anyone else who jumps out that he's more like, but like I said, it's never crossed my mind. Oh yeah, he's just trying to capitalize on The Rock, but that is a good heel thing for MJF to say. And if I'm Ricky Starks, I mean, I don't know. Do you think he was listening to MJF tear into him like that and thinking, hey, I just got compared to The Rock, I'll take that. Or, oh man, he's really like diminishing me. I'm going to really have to come back hard in order to, keep my dignity and redeem myself. Well, what did you think listening to that? And then you can comment also on the Rock and Piper aspect.
Well, like I had mentioned earlier, when MJF was going there for a bit, I was like, oh man, they're in trouble here, because I even though I was confident in Ricky Stark's ability on the mic, I didn't.
Sonny Siaki, I have to say it before. Sonny Siaki was the Rock imitator in TNA. Go ahead, sorry, Brandon.
I
wasn't even trying to think of it. It's just that's how the brain works.
It just came
stop trying to think of it.
Of course,
boom, that path opens up, and there it is.
You didn't have to go through the you didn't have to do the alphabet game.
No, I didn't, although I do that way more regularly now than I did 20 years ago. Oh, my God.
So
what's that thing you put in your mouth and you chew with flavor? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, gum. Yeah, it's crazy how often I do that.
So yeah, when MJF got going, I thought they were, even though I had faith in Stark's ability on the mic, I thought that MJF was being so clever and hitting so close to home that Starks would have a hard time really lashing back. Obviously he didn't, and he matched him word for word, and I thought it worked incredibly well. So I mean, if I'm Starks in that scenario and he's as confident as he appears to be, I feel like he probably had a pretty good idea of what he was going to say. And if Max, took it one step further, he had some things in his back pocket that he could hit, and he hit him. So, I don't think that there's anything for Starks to come out of that promo being upset about. I think that, they both did their job well enough that they accomplished what they set out to do, which was make the match next week more interesting. What was the second part of that?
Brian Piper, MJF.
Oh, yes. I don't. In both situations, I have never looked at Ricky Starks and thought, oh, The Rock. And I've never looked at MJF and thought, oh, Roddy Piper. I mean, I understand the comparisons. I certainly get the comparisons for sure, but neither of them feel like blatant ripoffs or imitations or anything like that.
All right. We'll go to Jay in Hartford in a moment, but we got an email on the Ricky Starks promo, so I thought this is a good time to read it. James in Clemson said, I just want to double down on how good that Ricky Starks promo was. I was texting my friend at the time, and he said it best when he said, quote, that promo made me want to fight my son. I've always been a huge Starks fan and look forward to next week. It truly feels like he is the one guy who can go toe-to-toe with Moxie on the mic. I would like your input on what's next for Starks after theoretically losing to MJF. What I don't want to happen is see Starks disappear from AEW TV after this. I want Tony Khan to keep Starks hot. I want this to come back around in a couple months for a longer build to a pay-per-view match. But I challenge AEW to resist the temptation to put a title on him in the meantime. Keep the guy hot without using one of AEW's 50,000 titles. They did that with MJF. Do it with Ricky. What do you think? Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that asking AEW as a promotion to keep someone consistently featured on television is a big ask. I mean, that has been my chief complaint about this product for quite some time, is that wrestlers will cycle in and out and do so without explanation. So, Wade, you and I have talked before about how I think AEW could benefit from cycling guys in and out for 2 to 3 month programs. They come in, they appear weekly, they have a feud or two, and then they're cycled out for a bit, and then the next guy comes in, and you do that throughout the year. But AEW hasn't really subscribed to that formula. What instead they have most often done is bring a guy in, he wrestles on TV, he disappears for 3 weeks, they pick up the story 3 weeks later. And I think that hurts the talent. And I think that there have been a lot of people who have suffered from booking in that fashion. Ricky Starks is one of them. So I hope that his performance tonight, and if we get a great performance next week, I hope that leads to more consistent booking for him. As sort of an AEW original, as someone who is sort of homegrown, I think that they'd benefit by booking those guys strongly and consistently on television, but that just has not been their game.
I agree. It's a big ask, unfortunately. I don't know what's next for Ricky. If his deal is up soon, then this might be the last hurrah. What an audition tape he just created. If I'm Tony Khan, I secure him and I feature him. I'm really curious how the feud with MJF plays out, and if it feels like a decisive defining down of Ricky, hey, nice visiting the top tier, now back to the mid card for you, or if they find a way to feature him and protect him and make it seem like, hey, this is a taste of something more to come. But man, he was good tonight.
Do you feel like he is someone who's better suited for WWE or for AEW?
I think he fits both. I think he fits both great. Honestly, I think he can talk, he can wrestle. He's not like super high spot, you know, fancy guy, mm-hmm. but he's not, you know, like Sean Spears-esque, who just, you know, it's like,
right.
yeah, no one in AEW is going to get excited about him. I mean, Ricky's a really good wrestler and really good on the mic. He's got a good look. He's in his 30s, but, I mean, he just comes across as, like, this rising star in his 20s, you know, and so you don't have to wait for him to, you know, mature into being ready on and off camera. He's turnkey ready, and you can roll with him. If he had, you know, an extended run as TNT champion and they just built the title around him, I mean, I wouldn't be against it, but it's not, you know, I'd rather have him not facing a different guy every couple of weeks because he's a defending champion. I'd rather have him in feuds that last a while and involve, you know, heated promos like we saw tonight.
And that title has been so defined down since Cody left, really. I mean, that just hasn't been a focal point at all. I mean, they toss it around from guy to guy, and there just really isn't ever much story behind it.
Yep, agree. All right, we got more emails to get to, but we'll go to Jay in Hartford next. Jay, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight? Go ahead, Jay. Did Jay fall asleep? Was that a snore?
Gee, wait, I'm here. Can you
Jay, are you there? No, we can. There you are.
Oh,
what's
hey,
on your
hey,
mind about Dynamite,
a lot,
Jay?
Thanks a lot. Hey, so I enjoyed the show, but I just wanted to... regarding Regal, Moxley, the whole thing there, you know, while I wasn't really a fan of Regal's explanation, I appreciated that they at least tried to, you know, make it make sense and say, you know, I mean, there's really no way you could, or that someone should forgive, you know, someone, you know, costing them the world championship. But as much as I didn't like Regal's explanation, and I heard you say maybe I think that Moxley just seemed rather, you know, uninterested, not a fan of how, you know, of the finish of the match and the way that we've had to, you know, the way they had to kind of proceed. But I actually think it was rather – my favorite part about it is Moxley's reaction and the fact that he – did not address the comments by Regal and the fact that he just kind of, you know, just pretty much ignored it. I thought it was in character somewhat to just say, you know what, it showed me that storyline-wise, Moxley, the character, does not or has not yet forgiven Regal despite that, you know, supposedly, you know, whatever, despite the explanation. So I thought from just in character that it made sense, and it was the best part about the whole segment, the fact that he actually ignored it. He did not attempt to, because there's no way he could have verbalized, like, you know, okay, I forgive Regal. Like, that would have just made the whole thing even worse. I think Moxley, ignoring what Regal said, says to me that his character still doesn't forgive Regal, and I think it just made the whole segment better, as bad as it was, if that makes sense.
I get what you're saying, and I think there's worse things they could have done, but when your lead babyface ex-world champion who got screwed by a friend out of a championship doesn't have a rebuttal for that friend who betrayed him, because in a meta sense, it's pretty obvious, or at least I think it's going to be assumed by most viewers in a meta sense, he just thinks this is utter nonsense and it doesn't make sense. That's not a great, better option compared to him forgiving Regal, which would have been ridiculous too. I mean, Moxley could have said, you know, hey, William, you're not forgiven. I respect the hell out of you, but, you know, what you did cost me a world title, and I'm not cool with it. And I just need to beat some people up to get my anger out of my system, and you know, and that's just the awkwardness of not demanding a rematch. I mean, we get cheated that badly out of something, and you're not, you know, just demanding a rematch because that's not in the cards, it's not in the plans. It also makes Moxley seem like he's okay with the fact that he lost the title under those circumstances. So to me, I don't think we should be trying to figure out the, like, a positive consolation spin or decision they made on something that was just a convoluted mess. Brandon?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like I had mentioned earlier, I just think that even if Mox had just said like something along the lines of, I don't forget what you did. You cost me a title, but you know, I didn't want you winding up in a hospital. Like something to that effect. You just yep. acknowledge that he is still standing by the Blackpool Combat Club, but he doesn't forgive Regal, because the thing is it does kind of undercut what Moxley's character is all about, which is fighting and being AEW World Champion. I mean, that was kind of his battle cry in the wake of all the fallout with CM Punk. Like, Moxley was the guy who was going to be there and defend the company and defend the company's honor. And in a physical sense, the physical sense of the company's honor being the AEW world title. So for him to now suddenly seem like he just doesn't care about it anymore, it just doesn't speak well to the character that he's trying to portray. And I think the way that Mox handled it shows that he is probably pretty aware of that. And so he's just kind of went on.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a mess. I don't even want to try to like fix it. I mean, I can sit here and be like, oh, Moxley could have said this. And I'm just sort of like, do I even want to be bothering doing this? Like if Moxley participates, it almost seems like it, then he's part of this as opposed to a conscientious objector, which is what it feels like he is to me at this point. Honestly, the MJF Regal thing, I don't know if this is what they originally had planned. I assume they either had something else planned or had wanted to have an option to have both options. Like, they did things so that they could do either, but in a way it made neither make sense. Or was this all just like, oh, Punk's gone and, oh, we have all this stuff we got to do. And then they just didn't think it through and they did it. And now they realize, what a mess it is. I don't know. I'm getting in a bad mood talking about it. I want things to make more sense than this. Jay, back to you.
Yeah, no problem. No, I mean, I appreciate you talking about it some more there. So I'll move on. The Acclaimed, if I could talk about them just for a moment, just something really, really brief about them. Anthony Bowen, I'm not a fan. And this could be small, but to me, it just makes such a huge difference in enjoying their work. I'm not a fan of when he screams, whatever city the Acclaimed have arrived. I just, like, hate it. It just, like, I'm like, go away. They're entertaining, but it reminds me of, like, screaming does not a good promo make, right? If that makes sense. Like, it's like when you used to talk about Dolph Ziggler, and when he had that period of where he would just yell. And granted, it's not a promo. It's more a catchphrase. But every time I hear it, all I hear is he can't cut a promo. Like, I have to scream because otherwise I can't get over this catchphrase. So I don't know if that's ever bothered anyone else, but it I could do without it. I could do with him saying it in a much calmer tone and I would care more.
Yeah.
When he screams it, I don't know what do you think about that.
Yeah,
it's small, but it's like
it makes my vocal cords hurt when people talk like that. Like, I don't like when MJF overmodulates. I don't think he needs to yell. I don't like when Samoa Joe froths at the mouth and yells. Samoa Joe tonight, was it tonight or on the promo or was it on Rampage? And wherever he did a promo recently, it was so good.
Tonight.
It was on the video package tonight. Yeah. Maybe
yes.
He did it both places, but I like when Joe is just badass soft talk. I talk soft, carry a big stick, and there's that intensity and that understatedness. It's so much better than when he's frothing at the mouth, yelling. And yeah, I mean, Anthony Bowen's doing that. That's not my favorite thing. It doesn't bother me as much because it's a catchphrase. It's not meant to be a crescendo of a promo. Where I think that's when a promo ends with just somebody screaming or the whole promo is loud, that bothers me more than just a catchphrase that said that way. But yeah, I'm with you. I can totally see why you react that way. I don't know, Brandon, what do you think? Has that ever crossed your mind as a negative?
It doesn't bother me personally, but I also would not fault anyone for being bothered by it. I don't think that it is an invalid complaint because typically, yes, I do think that overmodulation or the yelling that you're talking about is sort of a cheap way to express anger. There are more effective, more intelligent ways and more sinister ways for heel wrestlers to kind of get their point across. Of course, in Bowen's case, he's not a heel, he's a babyface. But I think the reason it doesn't bother me is because of what you bring up, Wade, the fact that it's almost like a battle cry. It's part of the entrance. It's part of the shtick. So it doesn't bother me, I think, because of that. If it was part of a promo and he was doing it every time, yeah, I would probably be inclined to be bothered by it. And definitely second the stuff about Samoa Joe, who is so intimidating. Like he is such I have met Samoa Joe at WrestleMania Access before, five or six years ago. And, you know, very, very nice, very, very affable guy, but incredibly intimidating. Like, does not need to yell to be scary.
Totally. Well, go back. The best promos the Road Warriors, Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal ever did was in the AWA. I mean, there's some good ones for sure on TBS too, and in syndication with Jim Crockett. But I saw pretty much every AW promo they did, and because they just had time. And Hawk was witty and intense, and he made every word and every syllable count, and he was funny. And then he would say, "Tell him, big guy." And then he'd slap Animal in the chest. And then Animal would just yell. And it was like Hawk was way more entertaining, way more effective, way more compelling. They were a good contrast, and it's fine. You know, I mean, I'm for contrasting tag teams. But, like, do you want to be Hawk or do you want to be Animal? Everybody should want to be Hawk. And you know, intimidating, understated, intense, witty, if you can bring that too, that's great. So yeah, I mean, there's just lots of examples where the yelling version is less compelling. I mean, there's like yelling tantrums that are funny, you know, Bobby Heenan yelling in a tantrum was great. But the best promo people, you know, like Roddy Piper wasn't, you know, yelling and screaming. But there was, you know, when he had to be, there was an intensity and he captured your attention. Jake Roberts, same things. The great promos didn't feel the need to froth and yell and stomp. So anyway. Jay, back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I just figured I'd say that, like, again, otherwise they're great. That just bothers me every week. And then the scissor me thing, like, I could take or leave. So it's like, and then they scream, and I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, the match for what it was good, and so congrats on their win, which I thought was the way to go. You know, I'd rather see FTR win those titles once they don't have 50 other championships. But anyway, so I can bring up so many other things, but I'll go this way, just with Ricky Starks, and I'll let you go on this one. I love the segment with him and MJF tonight. MJF is so good on the mic. He's so good. And I actually worried during the promo, like when he called him a Dwayne Johnson wannabe or whatever phrase he used, and then he said, "I'm going to call you the Pebble." And, you know, it was kind of funny, and I'm like, oh, no. Like, is this going to hurt Ricky Stark? You know, like, oh, wait, the crowd's going to want to chant Pebble. And instead, I think they chanted A-hole at MJF instead, which was good that they didn't jump on the Pebble thing. But when not everyone, I think, would have been able to go toe-to-toe with MJF in that scenario, like, I'm like, he's burying the guy, but instead Ricky Starks held his own, and he actually called MJF out. You talked about it maybe last week, but like the low-hanging fruit, as Ricky Starks referred to it, with, you know, crapping on the city, so to speak, and things like that. And Wade, I'm going to say I disagreed with you a little bit, like, because to me that's what makes wrestling wrestling, like when the bad guy comes out and says, you know, sports team sucks, it's fun, right? And, like, you know, if you're there live, you're gonna laugh and you're gonna boo, whatever. Like, I have no problem with it. MJF's a heel, so it works for me. but you also don't want it to be what you just lean on. And so I do see, I guess, your point somewhat, but I just love that Ricky Starks actually called him out on it. And I'm like, okay, it's not just Wade, right? It's other people saying, like, hey, like, you come out and you talk bad about the fans and their sports teams, whatever, that's low-hanging fruit. What else do you have? And so I don't know if you wanted to draw attention to it, but I just really thought Starks did a great job. He held his own. I don't expect him to win the title, but it makes me want to see the match even more and just see him go as far as he can in AEW. So I'll leave you with that.
Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I wanted to bring attention too to one of the things that Ricky Starks said in the beginning of his rebuttal to Max that it got me thinking about because I definitely agree that I was very much worried. I mentioned a couple times tonight on this show that I thought that Max was so clever that he was risking turning the crowd in his favor. And I thought it was really, really smart of Ricky to open up his side of the promo with calling MJF MaxiPad, not because it was like terribly clever, but because it was funny enough that I think he knew that the crowd would start chanting it at MJF. And he needed at that point before he, went on this fiery rant, he needed to make sure that crowd was in his pocket. And at that time, they weren't, because MJF was so effective at cutting Ricky down. So, I mean, maybe he came out there and that was what he planned to say, regardless of how, the crowd reacted to MJF's side of things. But credit to him regardless. But if that was off the cuff, if he decided that he needed to do that to pull the crowd in, I mean, that was brilliant. And it worked, and it set the stage for what was to come in the next few minutes. As far as him being, someone who could potentially be a champion, he's not going to win the title next week. They're just getting things going with MJF. I think that it's going to be a definitive win for Max. I obviously expect him to win under some sort of nefarious means, but whether or not Starks can be a champion down the line, I think obviously it depends on what his status with the company is, whether or not he sticks around with AEW or moves on to WWE or whatever the case may be. But it's going to have a lot to do with what the booking looks like in the future, because Starks has been a start-stop guy for his entire tenure. And they have gone cold on him before. I mean, they seemed to be getting behind him pretty significantly when he split from Powerhouse Hobbs. And then they went to pay-per-view and just had Hobbs virtually squash him. And yes, he got a win back later on Dynamite, but I mean, that had some lasting impact. I mean, they definitely defined him down, at least for that time. And I think he's overcome it since, but you can't overcome those things every single time. I mean, eventually they will stick. So he's doing a lot of great stuff right now, but he's going to need help from the booking side of things if he's going to stay, a relevant top-tier guy.
Yeah, I agree. Like the Ricky Starks one, one thing I liked is he was saying things that are you would want people in your life to be. Like he emphasized dignity and respect and called out MJF for skipping the meet and greet and, calling him out as I think everyone should be for the way he won the title and walking around like he earned something and like that title means anything given the way he won it. And, that should get under MJF's skin and he should hate it because it's the truth. And then the line, I'm going to take the responsibility of being champion off your plate, you little boy. And then MJF just kicks him in the nuts. So it's just like, Ricky outdid him on the mic. MJF's known for being great on the mic and Ricky just had this great closing line and MJF didn't go back to the microphone. He just took the cheap shot, and that said everything. So, yeah. Good stuff. All right, Jay, back to you.
All right, so back to me, right? I said nothing else, and since I got another opportunity here. During the Battle Royal, I noticed Kip Sabian in the match. And I remembered, hey, Kip Sabian's on the roster. They had a period of time where he wasn't on television, and then he, like, I didn't follow it. I had no idea what this story was about. Even until now, I have no idea what it was about when he showed up in the audience with the bag over his face or something. I guess it was a story they had been playing, I don't know, on YouTube or something. But apparently that was like some big reveal that he was the guy with the bag on his face or something. But pretty much, I don't know where he's been since then until tonight. I'm like, oh, yeah, Kip Sabian. Didn't they recently reveal him being the guy with the bag on his face and he's supposed to, like, do something now? So it just led me to thinking how, I guess you want a large roster. Like Wade, you tell me, like, I don't know if the roster is too big or, but it just really bothers me that you have, you know, guys that you could not see for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month at a time. And then it's like, oh yeah, this person does work for AEW. And then they get, I mean, you need that supporting cast, so to speak, but that's something that kind of really stands out. You don't want people to get overexposed, but at the same time, like, so much time passes sometimes without you seeing certain talent that you just forget that they're even in AEW. Like, I don't know if I'd want that to be my spot on the roster that I'm forgettable.
Yeah. When Kip Sabian shows up, I mean, you just, as a viewer, you're like, okay, well, you know, that was nice seeing him. Now in 3 months, we'll see him again. And, you know, we got him on Rampage on Friday and on Dynamite on Wednesday. So that's like, you know, wow. Yeah, there's just too many people who are just sort of lingering. And then all of a sudden it's like they stomp their feet or, you know, there's a spot and Tony looks at the roster and goes, oh, we haven't done anything with him in a while. Or, you know, who knows what the context, what the procedure is, at least some people are off TV getting back on. But, you know, you just don't get the most out of the angles that you're doing if you don't go, if they're half-baked, if they're half-executed, if they're brought up and then forgotten about. And it all, I wish they would acknowledge injuries or vacations or other obligations. And just, you know, say, hey, the last time we saw this guy, it was this. He hurt himself in training. Now 5 weeks later, he's picking up right where he left off. Like, give us some explanation. He can make it up or it can be real. I don't care. But something that fits the narrative of the show instead of, oh, here he is again or here she is again. And it actually makes the wrestler seem unimportant when they can be gone for so long and they come back and there's no acknowledgement that they've been gone. So it is an area where I wish AEW would improve. And it's not about the size of the roster. It's about the choosing people on your roster to push and being all in with them for at least the length of a program. If you want to, you know, bring them down a notch afterwards and bring someone else up into the onto Dynamite in a prominent feud, that's fine. But there should still be an update and some sort of explanation when they resurface. Brandon, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, it's my biggest complaint about the AEW product, and it's been consistently bad for quite a while, especially since the Ring of Honor talent was infused, and they started doing the cross promotion with New Japan, and Tony kept signing, you know, new guy after new guy after new guy. I brought it up when I was on a post show about a month ago with Zach Adorn. I just said that a lot of times it feels like Tony Khan books AEW like it's a really, really loaded indie show, in the sense that he has these guys available to him, so he books them in matches that he knows people will want to see. And he's right. They do want to see them in matches. But AEW isn't an indie promotion where you watch one show and then you go home and you don't think about the promotion for a month and then you come back and see their next iteration with whatever guys.
But you've been marveling on social media for weeks about them.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a weekly television product that you need to tell stories. You need to tell stories on a consistent basis. A lot of indie promotions don't have the luxury of telling stories because they may not have specific talent the next time they're in town. That's just the nature of the business. AEW does not have that problem. They have people under contract who they can tell coherent stories with. And so often they choose instead to book matches for the sake of booking good matches.
Yep.
And that's that's great for an indie promotion, but not for a television show. So I just want consistency.
Not for a TV show that wants more than a million viewers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And wants to keep those million that they have because, you know, they've had some issues as of late. So, and I know WWE has too, but, you know, granted, time.
SmackDown's not down 20% from where they were a month ago. But
I know Raw had an issue this week in particular, but.
Yeah.
But the point I'm getting at is essentially, like, I understand that AEW has this massive roster. Do I think that they would be better served by trimming some fat, featuring certain talents less, featuring other talents more? Sure. But that's a complaint you can have virtually about almost any promotion at any time. You want your favorites featured more. You want guys you view as lesser than to be featured less. Everybody's going to have different opinions on who those people should be. But what I want to see AEW do is focus on a specific crop of wrestlers for a specific period of time. And it doesn't need to be – it can be loosely defined. You don't have to commit to these are the guys we're going to use for the next 3 months or 4 months. Everybody can be staggered. It can be handled in a different – in a way. But what I don't want, what I want them to avoid and what they so often do is – wrestler X will show up on Dynamite tonight, for example. Let's take Ricky Starks. If he were not a world title challenger to MJF right now, MJF could or Ricky Starks could show up on Dynamite tonight, have a match, and start a program with somebody. And then we might not see him for a month. And they won't talk about him. They won't explain it. They won't say anything about it. They'll just have him show up a month from now and pick up the story right where they left off,
okay,
like
yep.
this last week.
Yep.
That's a problem.
Yeah, imagine watching an NBA or college team, and, you know, you've got your starters, but every once in a while, one of the starters just doesn't show up to the game. And he's gone for a month, and then he just comes back, and he's a starter again, and no one explains anything. Meanwhile, you've got eight bench players, one game, and then you have, or seven bench players, I guess. I think it's 12. And you have seven, and then, like, the next game, like, four of them are gone. And for a week and a half, it's just four other guys. And then suddenly, like, then three of those guys are gone, and two of them come back, and then there's some new guy you've never seen before, but the announcer tells you how great he was in the Europe League. And then, like, you go to the – and then, like, I mean, it's just so random. Like, I mean, some of that actually happens because now the NBA has the G League, and, you know, there's players who get sick or they get injured, and, you know, the bench does change. But you get an update, and there's a clear hierarchy. And a player can play well enough to earn his spot on the bench and take a spot away from somebody who was gone because of injury or poor play or whatever. That's a story. Tell that story. Don't just, you know, intermittently without explanation, just have, like you said, someone just disappear and then show back up like they were never gone. And I mean, that's, you know, part of that is the deep roster. Part of it is I just don't think there's a real big picture view by Tony of how viewers really experience, at least the viewers he's chasing, to stay above a million or get back to a million now or grow. I just don't think he has his eyes on them. I think he gets super pleased with the, you know, the indie and international dream matches. And those fans, for the most part, are going to be around for that, but it is a limited audience compared to those who will show up for a product that takes you on a journey with charismatic wrestlers fighting over a few titles that really matter and are protected, with finishes that seem to count when there's, outlandish, outrageous cheating like MJF's win. It is an issue. It's not just not talked about. And so on and on. Anyway, Jay, anything else? Oh, go ahead, Brandon. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to add, like, I've been critical of certain additions, like, because I just happened to be on the post-show the week that they debut. So, like, for example, A.R. Fox, I wasn't on for that one, but A.R. Fox and Bandido was one that I was on the post-show for. I have nothing against those guys. They're good wrestlers. But I didn't want to see them that particular week because I could rattle off a dozen names that have been under contract with AEW for a year that I haven't seen in 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, there's people showing up you don't want to see or that you're not interested in seeing. It's like, I mean, I applaud them for having Juice Robinson do a promo on Rampage last week, but that's not enough. It's not enough to be one of the key matches to sell a pay-per-view.
No, definitely. But it isn't even so much that I don't want to see them or I don't want to see them get a job with AEW or that they can't be featured players. It's just that I don't understand the motive of bringing in more and more and more and more talent when you can't manage the talent you already have under your umbrella.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Jay, anything you want to close with?
Yeah. It's actually one of the reasons that I've had such a difficult time with Death Triangle. Like, Pac is good for, you know, being on TV a few weeks and then not, and then he's a heel, he's a face. And I shot an email late last week, and I'm hoping at some point you get to it, and maybe it's covered on one of the flagships or mailbag episodes, but like with the Young Bucks, the Best of Seven series and the match they had last week, but we won't get into it. That was last week. But, it makes it hard, you know, when you're not consistently booking your faces and your heels and you have these guys showing up, disappearing, and it just – so, yeah, I'm going to let you guys go and enjoy the rest of your night. But thank you for taking my call this week, please.
Great. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. All right. We'll close out here with a couple emails, Brandon. Alex from Montreal says, a really enjoyable 2 hours of pro wrestling tonight, a memorable promo from Ricky Starks, a brutal match between Joe and Darby, and a fantastic main event, which is probably the Acclaim's best in-ring performance to date. This show gave me that AEW feeling that the best episodes of Dynamite do. On top of all this, the women's division finally feels like an integral part of the show and not just an afterthought. Jamie Hayter had meaningful mic time. Sheeta and Bunny with added stakes, although Bunny should be nowhere near a title match. A solid women's trios match tonight that made me want a Velvet Sky and Velvet Sky singles match. Britt and Saraya with intrigue going into a major Dynamite in January. Ruby and Ty getting follow-up on Rampage for what started as a Dynamite story, and Athena continuing to get more focus. Are you aware of what has prompted this recent refocusing? I imagine Madison Rayne has been a welcome addition and that Kenny might be agenting some of the matches again. This episode just felt really refreshing to me, and the immediate future looks bright too. Sure, it's not perfect, but it feels like the pieces are there for an exciting and far less cursed 2023. Thanks for your time. Well, I mean, I think all the bad things started happening when Danhausen showed up. So if we're speaking of curses, I like Danhausen, but maybe Tony should experiment by sending him away for 3 months and see if things get better. Maybe he's just cursed the company. Or he might make the company curse the company from afar if he's taken off TV. It's scary when you deal with someone with magic powers. So the women's division. So Jamie Hayter got mic time. What do you think of that, Brandon?
It's good. I mean, I like Jamie Hayter. I'm hesitant to heap too much praise on what they're doing with her because we've seen this story before. Like we've seen them attach the rocket to someone in the women's division, put the title on them and say that, you know, this is going to be the person who rights the ship. And so far no one has righted the ship. So I hope it's Jamie Hayter. I hope it works. But I'm just kind of taking a wait and see approach.
Yeah. I just don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it right now. You know, I mean, she's volunteering to defend her title. I wish AEW had, you know, a more formal structure in place. Who gets to decide when the title's on the line? Does it have to be approved? If not, can a heel champion pick opponents and avoid the top opponents? But why is Bunny within, you know, any shouting distance of a chance at a championship match?
And why
are
they defending another random title?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Don't they have enough of those?
So, Sheeta, just don't even have Sheeta on even graphics holding a belt. I mean, it just says, oh, there's a bunch of belts out there, and everyone's not focused on the AEW women's title because there's belts for everyone. I guess people like her, so maybe they're hedging on her being a heel and Britt wasn't there to interrupt. I'm a fighting champion and a bloody good one. I mean, who's going to boo that? You know, she's confident, but she's a fighting champion. So, I mean, if this was her being a babyface, so be it. And maybe that's what it was. If so, it makes sense. If it's trying to establish a heel character, and I don't think that worked. There was a lot that, you know, a lot that they could have told story-wise in the Jade Cargill six-woman tag. But, you know, a lot was going on, and they need to do more than just have that match to establish, I think for most people, anticipation for some spin-off singles matches.
I think with Cargill right now, there's just a sense of her being so walled off to the rest of the division. Like, they feed her these opponents who they clearly don't see all that much in, and occasionally, like, someone who has been involved in or around the AEW women's title will sort of sniff the Jade Cargill universe, but she's really off doing her own thing. And at some point, I know that they're building up this streak and everything, but at some point, like, they're gonna have to either sacrifice a bigger name to her or sacrifice her to a bigger name. Like, one of the two things is going to need to happen, because I just don't know. I already get the sense that, like, she's cooled off a little bit, and that's not to say she's not still over and that the character isn't still working. But I just don't sense that there's quite as much there with her as there was even just a couple of months ago. And I don't think that's because of anything that she's doing. I just think it's because they're not putting anything on her plate that has any meat. Like, they're just giving her these people who, you know, she's gonna squash.
Saray, I'm still not like particularly impressed with. You know, I mean, she's likable, but, you know, and then Baker interrupted, and you got to move right to a pay-per-view match because you're against me, and then they kind of set up another match, and I thought it was a little cute by half to seem like she's challenged her to a singles match, but it's a tag match, and everyone seemed fine with it, so what's the point? I guess
the ticket thing was weird too. It didn't really work.
No, yeah, you can either watch me wrestle or wrestle me. It was like, that just added nothing. I'm glad you brought that up. And, I mean, I just want there to be people in management who decide what matches are. Like, I'm just tired of all these segments with wrestlers just interrupting promos and going, hey, how about this match? And then they have a match. It's like, shouldn't there be somebody in charge somewhere deciding? You know, I don't want NBA players deciding when and where they're going to have games. Like, there should just be somebody whose job it is to match people against each other with some semblance of logic. And instead, it's like wrestlers just challenging each other constantly. Oh, I'm going to defend my title against the winner of Rampage. Well, who says you get to do that? What are the rules? They just lean on that so much. And I mean, that's how we got the FTR match tonight too.
Yeah. Occasionally, like, Shivani or Excalibur will say that Tony Khan confirmed in the headset, but it's pretty rare that they do it.
I don't want confirmation. Right. I want Tony Khan or someone else or the championship committee or the whatever, some mythical group to be like, this is who the people whose job it is to book matches have come up with. And I think it would be refreshing and it would give some structure to the show that I think would make everything just feel more important and more logical rather than just sort of, you know, booked on the fly storyline-wise.
But wait, if they did that, how would you have guys who aren't employed by the company getting world title matches?
Well, there is that. All right. Athena is better as a heel because she's really obnoxious. let's see.
I did see there was a big thing about a double standard. I don't know if you saw that on social media.
Likely not.
She is very upset because she said she believes it's a double standard that basically if she works an acrobatic style match, then she says that the women get flack for not wrestling hard enough, not looking like the way that men's matches do. And if she hits hard, then she gets accused of being dangerous.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I heard that.
You know, if Moxley or whatever punched somebody in the face, everybody would love it, but she doesn't. And yeah, it just.
Yep. All right. I was shaking my head at that when I was reading that. All right, JB from Detroit says, one, do you think it's possible Saray is partner against Baker and Hayter when AEW returns to LA will be Sasha Banks? Is that the right way to introduce her if you were to sign her?
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but man, I don't know. I mean,
you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Because the AEW fans are going to side with the AEW originals more. You know, there's going to be a big batch who do. Saraya was off to such a rocky start, and Sasha's going to come in and, you know, knowing Sasha, she's going to present herself as a really big deal. And I don't know how she's going to react, although maybe there's a history that we can draw from, if she's not greeted as the number one most popular star to ever step foot in an AEW ring. And that's something that not every wrestler has. And it can be good or bad. But to me, like, you give Sasha the stage to herself and a really well-thought-out, sensible storyline. And if she's a face, you put her against someone who fans are really going to boo. But, I mean, we're going down the road too far. I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I don't know where ultimately Sasha ends up.
I think you're playing with fire a little bit if Jamie Hayter is an established babyface at that point. And I think that that means – you also have to turn Britt. But, man, I don't know. The whole thing is just so messy. I mean, really, they just should have turned Britt when she cut the clearly babyface promo prior to Full Gear. And then they wouldn't have this issue because people would cheer her like they want to cheer her, and they're already cheering Jamie Hayter. So problem solved. But
Or don't cut that babyface promo.
Well,
and
yeah.
Britt Baker be a heel
course.
And stop playing the cheers. Yeah, I mean, right. Exactly. But, like, the option they choose is a sort of half-baked in between.
Right.
Nothing, you don't get the response you want. Because,
and the fact that it was pre-taped and they just aired it, just don't air it. I mean, how clear is that? That was one of the better babyface promos of the whole Full Gear build.
Yep.
And she wasn't a babyface.
Yep.
So
I know.
I don't know if Hayter is if the plan is to make Jamie Hayter a babyface coming out of that match or before that match, whatever the plan is. Then I think you risk either bigfooting her or bigfooting Sasha, depending on her reaction. So, yeah, it's probably – now that I think about it, I would probably vote against it. I also – I would be surprised, personally, if Sasha genuinely wanted to go to AEW. And – I say that because for a lot of men who have left WWE, they are guys who were fed up with the way that WWE was booking them or handling them, or they wanted more, you know, more creative freedom, whatever the case may be. And most of those signings made a whole lot of sense. Most of those, you know, most of the guys jumping ship made a whole lot of sense. And I think the same has gone for the women who have gone over. You know, you have your Saraya, who wasn't going to be cleared by WWE. That makes a lot of sense. Ruby Soho, or formerly Ruby Riott, who didn't feel she got her just due in WWE. Makes sense. Athena, same deal. Makes a lot of sense. Sasha Banks was one of the biggest stars WWE had. And as hard as AEW has tried to make a viable women's division, they are nowhere near WWE's level of promoting women at a main event level.
Mm-hmm.
Sasha Banks is not going to main event an AEW pay-per-view. It's not going to happen. They don't have the roster to do it right now. And I don't know if they will. And I don't know if Sasha Banks wants to commit to try to bring women up to that level. But right now, there's no match in the AEW women's division that could headline an AEW pay-per-view. Meanwhile, on the other side, Banks has opportunities to main event WWE pay-per-views. Banks has an opportunity to main event WrestleMania. I don't know how someone of her stature within the company chooses to go place where the division is just clearly lesser than.
The question is it her call after the way that she left and how some people feel about
right.
it?
Right. Sure. Of
yeah.
course.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
if WWE is not interested, then of course. But
yeah. Or they maybe they're interested, but they want to make it clear who's boss and who decides what happens on their TV shows, even if you don't like it.
Right.
Some wrestlers can't deal with that. And, you know, some don't trust the company they work for, and maybe, I don't know. I'm just throwing out, you know, other possibilities in terms of it not necessarily being her call, but
I just look at, like, if you took someone else from that division that is at or above Sasha's level, like, I don't think Becky Lynch is as successful in AEW. If she quits WWE tomorrow and walks over to AEW and they bring her in and they make her champion on night one, I don't think she's as big of a star there because the division's just not built for it.
Yeah. No, I think that's interesting point is would the division and the booking of it and the people who are in it rise to the occasion if they got somebody of Sasha or Becky's level, or would
they'd
that
have, yeah, they'd
would
have
they be
to
pulled
down? Yeah, like they'd have to make a complete commitment to really commit to that division in a really, really big way that they have shown no interest in doing so far.
Yeah. JB said, I could see TK wanting to make a big splash the second time around in such a big market, and would also make sense for Sasha's Hollywood aspirations. Sasha and Saraya also obviously share somewhat of a history with Sasha forcing Saraya's initial retirement. Yeah, I don't know how many WWE angles we want to, you know, pull into AEW canon, to be honest. I think AEW fans want their own canon organically created with an exception here and there, but I don't think everything that you can do from years ago in WWE and acknowledge it here is a good thing. We got that with the Strickland and Lee match against Shane Taylor Promotions, and like they're trying to do that backstory. Obviously, fewer people know about that, but it's another example of how many things in AEW just aren't organically created in the AEW playing field, and there's just too much of that.
I just wonder. If we don't know for sure that she even wants to wrestle. I mean, she doesn't need to at this point.
She
has made a name for herself outside of wrestling. If she doesn't want to wrestle anymore, she doesn't need to. The only thing, like when I look at aspirations of Sasha getting back in the ring, to me, the only reason that she has, if you take away the question of whether or not WWE is interested or whether they're going to play hardball or whatever the case may be there, if you just say, you know, all roads are equal, even you say, you know, money's equal, whatever, I think the one draw to AEW for her would be the schedule. But even that, WWE runs so much lighter of a house show schedule
now. Oh, I know.
Yeah. And who's to say that she can't negotiate a deal for herself similar to Roman Reigns? I mean, there's...
I think she cannot negotiate. Well, I...
Not...
Yeah. I don't. I know you're not saying in every way, but, like,
right.
I mean, Ronda Rousey is out there working a lot of dates. Sasha is not going to get a Roman deal. And, frankly, there's enough resentment in that company over her. They're not going to give it to her even if they think otherwise. If they liked her, maybe they would. And I'm not saying they don't like her. I'm saying there's people there who resent what happened and have mixed feelings about her, and those do not exist with Roman Reigns right now. Roman Reigns is beloved by management and wrestlers. I mean, so, and Sasha's not. She's a divisive personality behind the scenes, and you know, some people really like her, and obviously she's a star, and fans, she has a fan base, but she's not the type of wrestler who management's going to be like, let's roll out the red carpet, give her whatever she wants, the schedule she wants. So,
I definitely don't think, you know, we're talking the level that Roman Reigns has gotten, you know, no house shows, et cetera, et cetera. But again, the schedule is significantly lighter, of course. So that plays to her favor for one, but also I still think, you know, she is a big enough star and a big enough of a draw where I would think that if the bridge isn't burned, I would think that they can probably come to some sort of amicable agreement about, you know, a schedule that works for both parties, just given the level of star power that she does bring to the table.
All right, number two, during this week's ROH Final Battle conference call, Tony Khan said after this week we'd be seeing a lot less of ROH on Dynamite, and he doesn't want that ROH overshadowing AE branded shows. Do you believe this to be true, and what will be the positive and negative effects to Dynamite? So one, good, he listened. And he's acknowledging it in a way. Two, it's of course logical. There's the pay-per-view's over. They're not going to do as much of ROH when they're not trying to build up the pay-per-view and they're shifting gears to other things. So I think it absolutely will be the case. But, you know, if ROH doesn't get its own TV deal, then brace yourself for, you know, ROH being brought back into things. I don't want to have a long discussion on ROH right now. I mean, the pay-per-view's coming up, and we'll see what they do next week. But those are good things to hear from TK. I think those are welcome comments by most AEW fans.
Yeah, I definitely agree. As for potential negatives, I mean, I don't really see any outside of if you're a really big fan of guys that are going to be featured more heavily on the ROH side of things, then you may see them less if this does come to fruition. But hopefully that means that some sort of deal is imminent and they can clearly define these rosters and get two separate products. And, you know, if you have a set roster of ROH talent, that means that you can dedicate more time on AEW TV to AEW guys who are not being featured right now. So
we should have had a Chris Jericho in-person promo. If you're going to do a pay-per-view, ROH or otherwise, then he's your main event champion. He should be there and in person for the sake of fans who bought tickets tonight in Austin and to help sell the pay-per-view. You know, he'll be a fixture going forward. If they don't have a lot of ROH on the show, does he still bring the ROH belt with him all the time?
Right.
Is there some official edict on television or behind the scenes? We're going to stop talking about ROH, including championships. Will that seem jarring? I mean, they have this problem because the belts are there and top guys have them. It'd be weird to suddenly have them not bring them to the ring when, you know, almost everybody has a belt, and I'm only slightly overstating that.
Were they taping Rampage tonight, or is Rampage live?
I think they're taping it.
Okay, weird, because I wonder, is Jericho in the building and they just didn't use him? Because typically he does commentary on Rampage. So I just wasn't, yeah. I looked really quickly at Fozzy's schedule to see if they had something going on, but they don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, finally, do you think William Regal leaving the BCC and AEW entirely will ultimately be good for the group and the show? I feel that the BCC and JAS storyline has dragged on too long now and that the value that Regal had initially brought has dissipated. With the rivalry presumably coming to an end after Final Battle on Saturday and Regal moving on, I feel this could breathe life into the BCC. Also, how long do you think and should the BCC stay together? As always, love the show. Go VIP. It's been a long feud. I think Regal not being part of it makes it feel like it doesn't really necessarily have to go on. It'd feel weird having a Blackpool Combat Club with you and Moxley and Danielson. I wouldn't have an issue if they just all, you know, went singles or went their separate way. I'm rooting for Danielson's character to be coherent and disciplined. Decide if what you're going to be and be that. So I don't know. It's weird. They're giving a lot of TV time to somebody who everybody who goes on social media and websites and podcasts believes is leaving because he is. It's a lot of TV time being dedicated to that. And when your main player who got screwed over by him is Moxley and he doesn't want any part of it, I'm ready to move on one way or the other.
At least they actually wrote him out. I mean, we've seen worse. I mean, they really did write him out. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Blackpool Combat Club has been so loose for a while now. I mean, like you often go weeks at a time without seeing them involved with each other in any sort of capacity. I mean, outside of Regal doing commentary on Danielson and Moxley's matches, I mean, he was really the only one associated with each of the guys, and he was kind of associated with them individually. They haven't felt like much of a group. I'm fine with them staying amicable and friendly. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need them to be a team. They don't really feel like a team or a faction. I mean, they all dress very differently. They're all very different personalities. The way that the group started and the way that it was proposed between Danielson and Moxley was this idea that they were going to recruit wrestlers that they really liked and saw a lot of potential in. Mm-hmm. And that just stopped after Wheeler Yuta. I mean, they tried with Daniel Garcia and that thing got convoluted and kind of messy and then fell apart. And then Daniel Garcia disappeared from TV for months. So, I mean, yeah, it's already pretty loosely defined. I guess it doesn't really matter to me one way or the other, you know, how they go about it from here on.
Yeah. All right, very good, Brandon. We will end on that note. Thank you very much. Good discussion, hitting dynamite and some tangential topics too, if that's the right word. But good stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. It was. I mean, we had a lot of I feel like we hit on a lot of negatives, but a lot of positives as well. And for me, as someone who has been watching this show almost reluctantly for many, many weeks now, I mean, it has not been a show that I have enjoyed much of. And that's in stark contrast to how I felt about it last year. But I was genuinely, you know, thoroughly entertained for 2 hours tonight. I still had plenty of problems with it, but like, I thought this was one of the better full package presentations in several months. So
yeah, you subtract two or three like just things, and we'd be talking about, it would be a completely different tone to the show. But
yeah,
when you have, I mean, obviously we spent a ton of time on the Starks MJF thing, but that Regal promo, you know, understandably threw things a little off course. But yeah, you know, good content, and you know, the booking just still needs to be simplified and cleaned up.
Very, we barely touched on FTR, which one thing I would add, it was Excalibur, I think, who called them the best tag team of the year on their way out to the ring. And I know that there's been a lot of discourse this week about, you know, the Usos being voted as tag team of the year over them. And I know that there was a lot of pushback and a lot of disagreement, but man, I have a hard time disagreeing, simply because I think that FTR should have been the tag team of the year, but weren't because of fumbling within AEW's booking. And I know that some of that had to do with their attitude and some issues with Tony Khan, but as you and I discussed on this show previously, I think that they were such an important act that, you know, as a competent wrestling booker, you should overcome that and put that aside in order to feature one of your top acts prominently. And I thought that they were unquestionably the team of the year going into the summer, and then they lost a tremendous amount of steam just because of the lack of appearances.
Well, I think the Acclaim getting a win over them in a really good match is AEW sending a message to the fan base. The Acclaimed are not just visiting the main event. They're not just a novelty act because they got red hot, but we're going to move on to the real main event tag teams who you all know are better. Getting a clean win over FTR, no matter how the pin happened, is a way of sending a message to the fan base going, the Acclaimed are for real, and they're the top team right now in this company, not counting all the great wrestlers fighting in the trails division. Or for the ROH, you know, in ROH, and you know what, I mean, I'm being snarky about, you know, how spread thin and how many titles and all that, but seriously, the AEW tag team titles, I mean, it's the Acclaimed getting a win over FTR, I think is important if you want people to take the Acclaimed as seriously as more than just a fun act that's visiting main events before they go back down and feud with the Gun Boys and other similar mid-card acts. And so I thought that was good. And I mean, FTR can absorb the loss, but also politically it shows where they are right now. And I don't think Tony Khan is thinking he wants to commit to them, and he might, you know, be thinking in 6 months they won't be around. So let's get what we can out of them. It's good matches, but also put over some talent. And that's my interpretation of the finish tonight.
Yeah, it certainly felt that way. And I think it again went to establish that they're just not where they were earlier this year. And I do think that's unfortunate, you know, for whatever number of reasons and factors that there are. But I remember thinking after that main event with the Briscoes with the ROH pay-per-view over the summer that, man, they just had something really special. And not to say that they don't still, but it definitely feels less than it did.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thanks again, Brandon. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. And we'll talk to y'all next time.